You can now help us bring awareness in our fight against bullying in the public schools, the workplace, and in your community. Just go to www.davebond.org, and with any purchase you make on Amazon, 2 to 10% of your purchase will go to help fight against bullying and also to help us with the Bully Resistance Show. In order for this to work, you got to go to www.davebond.org, click on the Amazon banner, and then you have 24 hours to make a purchase. Also, if you donate any amount to help us fight against bullying, then you will receive any one of my 15 CDs at no cost, and we'll also include the shipping. For more information, you can go to my website at www.davebond.org or email me at bondmablues@gmail.com.
Welcome, everyone, to the Bully Resistance Show with David Wells, nationally known smooth jazz artist, CEO and co-founder of the Chocolate Jazz Foundation, and a co-host of a two-hour syndicated radio program called Chocolate Jazz Radio. Bully Resistance is a weekly one-hour show that's a motivational, informative, and inspirational program. We will have interviews with musicians, actors, government officials, politicians, psychologists, counselors, and just average day citizens. Of course, the topics will include making the right choices, never giving up, desire, discipline, determination, bullying in public schools, your workplace, and in your community, bully resistance and prevention, self-defense, jiu-jitsu, and current affairs, and much, much more. And if you're ready, we are. Here's your host, David Wells.
I want to thank everyone for tuning in to another episode of the Bully Resistance Show with David Wells. My name is David Wells, and today we have a guest that's actually a four-time Fargo Cadet Champ, two-time freestyle, a two-time Greco, also an outstanding Greco wrestler for 2017. He's a two-time Super 32 champ, also an Ironman champ, a Power Ray champ, and what's amazing, he's actually still in high school, and he's maintaining a 4.1 GPA, and of course, he has a lot of dreams that he's been telling me about. So at this time, I want to go ahead and introduce Braxton Amos on the Bully Resistance Show. Braxton, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Braxton, the first time I saw you, it was actually maybe a few weeks ago, maybe a little over a month ago. And I went to one of your wrestling matches at South where you were competing. And I think, if I remember right, there was maybe like four or five other teams that were actually competing that same day. And I actually went with one of my friends that also trains at in jiu-jitsu at Marietta Combat Sports, Jason Axley. And but anyway, I asked him who I need to keep an eye on, who's really talented, who's an upcoming star and everything else. And he pointed to you. And from that time on, I just sort of kept an eye on you because I'm really interested on how people handle themselves when they get to a certain level of performance. And I have to say, I was impressed with your demeanor on and off the stage. But my first question, before we go on any further, a lot of people might not be familiar with wrestling and the competitions, but can you go into a little bit more detail of the magnitude, the exposure of the competitions you competed in, starting with the Fargo Cadet Championship?
Fargo is considered to be the second toughest high school tournament in America behind the 17U and 19U World Team Trials. And it's just a week long of the nation's best high school athletes or high school wrestlers coming together and seeing who is the best one there. And it's a wrestler's dream to go there and compete. And it's not typical like the scholastic wrestling that you would see your normal high school doing. It's the Olympic styles of freestyle and Greco, which are a lot different than scholastic wrestling.
Let me ask you this. So the Fargo, the Cadet Championship, so that is that just held anywhere in the country, or is it just one location all the time?
Way back when, probably in the early 90s, I want to say, it was held in like Iowa and other places, but ever since that I can remember and that my coaches can remember, it's always been out in Fargo, North Dakota, which haven't been there. It is probably the not the craziest place in America, but the climate is wild because in the winter it's like negative 20. In the summer, my first year going out, so last summer, there was a heat advisory of like 120 degrees. So living there might is a little wild, but going out there, it's a lot of fun.
Now, does your dad go with you, or one of your parents, or do you just go with a bunch of other guys that are competing?
My parents go out. They fly because it's just easier on them. And then we have a little group of us from West Virginia called USA West Virginia. And okay. All the 50 states have a USA, like USA Ohio, USA Pennsylvania branch. And they send their best guys out to see how they match up.
Okay. So let me ask you this. So of all the championships that you've actually competed in, which one is the most, I guess, the most stressful that you have to, I mean, that you know you have to go ahead and compete well in or perform well in?
The most stressful would probably be Fargo. And then close behind it is Ironman, which is held where is it held? It's in Ohio somewhere. And it's pretty stressful too.
Okay. So let me ask you this. So when you get ready for a tournament like this, what is your training regimen? And how far out do you start training real hard for competition like that?
I won't start training hard until about 60 days, 90 days out. But I'm always staying in relatively good shape, running 6 times a week, lifting 3, and then getting a wrestling workout in at least every other day. But leading up to about 60, 90 days, I start getting in peak shape, getting technique and timing down, which is pretty stressful, but it's a lot of fun at the same time.
So what is your walking rate?
My walking.
Yeah, wait.
Up until about 2 weeks ago, it was about 215.
Okay.
And then coach gave us a couple days off, and I did nothing but just kind of eat and hang out.
Right.
So I'm up to about 224-ish.
Catches up.
Yeah, it caught up really quick.
Let me ask you this. So really to all the listeners, so all the tournaments that I mentioned at the introduction are high profile national tournaments, big tournaments. But it's just great to have high school students like yourself in the Mid Ohio Valley. And it's funny because there has been a lot of talent, athletes, musicians that have come out of West Virginia. And what's funny is that, you know, people have the stigma that live in West Virginia. Well, I live in West Virginia. There's nothing going to happen here. You know, there's no contacts. There's no connections or anything else. And that's the farthest from the truth. But you know, one of the reasons why, you know, I had you, Braxton, on the show was really because of your performance and how well you're doing and what sort of tops that. Of course, you know, you had an experience with bullying, of course, in either elementary school or junior high, and I know it's not a good thing. And of course, I'm going to let you tell your story later on, but I want to touch on just a few other things in regards to you and wrestling. Of course, I go travel all over the country, and I do these school assemblies in high schools and elementary schools and junior highs about bullying and making right choices. And I think what's tough on upcoming athletes or musicians or actors like myself or like yourself are the choices that you make from this point on. And it seems like the choices that we make, of course, will lead us either closer or further away from our goals. And as it's when you get to a level where you're at, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, do you feel that your choices become more tougher, or are you just sort of mindset and everything's on idle?
I mean, obviously everybody comes across tough choices this young in life and even as you get older. But honestly, I'm not really put in the situations that most high school kids are put in, because my friends and the community knows that even if I was offered this or they wanted me to go do this, that I wouldn't want to do it, nor would I. So what's really the point in them wasting the energy to try to convince me that we should go party or go do something else dumb?
Right. You know, and I'll tell you this, just a side note, you know, as a musician, I have some friends that are A-listers, and I think it's the same thing with A-listers and athletes. And I want to point out, I'm not for sure if you watch MMA or if you watch the UFC or not, but when athletes and when musicians get to a certain point, they have easier access, where people offer them, it could be Coke, alcohol, or anything else. And so it's just like, I think that's what happened to John Jones. I mean, even in his interviews and Joe Rogan, he actually partied hard, and he would party the night before. And I think when you get to that level, you got to be so focused and disciplined, like you were saying, and you just got to hang around, I guess, the right people that can help you get where you need to be. So that being said, can you tell us times when your friends would try to, you know, pull you away from either wrestling or your studies? Because your studies is pretty impressive too, where you're actually maintaining a 4.1 and also doing as well as you are with wrestling. But can you tell me if there's been any situations where your friends, anybody, have tried to pull you away from either wrestling or studies?
Yeah, I mean, there's been plenty of times where, like, after we'll get, like, we had a huge upset at the Powerade tournament, and a lot of them wanted to go party after we got back. And, like, they kept on trying to get me to go, saying, like, oh, you won, it'll be all right. Our tough part of the schedule's over, it'll be all right, you can go, you can have fun, you can drink, you can smoke, you can do whatever you want. And honestly, I was kind of mad about it, because these are my friends, these are my teammates, and right, they know my values, and they know what I can and
right,
I will do and I won't do. So really,
it's funny, because it's probably everybody. I think we even make choices within our mind, saying, well, you know, I don't need to probably practice as hard, or I don't need to train as hard, you know. And so I think everybody's faced, you know, with these choices all the time. You know, this, you know, the Bully Resistance Show, and I'm not for sure if you're familiar with it, but, you know, the show talks about bullying in the public schools, the workplace, and the community, and there's also current events. But we also talk about, like we're talking now, with right choices, discipline, determination, you know, like not giving up. And our mind, I feel this. I feel that our mind is probably our biggest battlefield when students or even adults, when they don't do as well as they think they should, especially after they feel they worked hard and they did everything possible, they start thinking the worst, you know what I mean? And it's, if they fail, you know, then you start coming with these excuses like, well, I'm not talented enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not strong enough, I'm too old, I don't have the right connections, I don't have the money, and on and on. And the easiest thing for anyone to do when things are not going their way is to quit. And everybody can quit, and it's not hard to quit, but if it's those that get knocked down, then they keep on getting back up over and over. That being said, can you tell us a time, maybe when, you know, if where you got so discouraged, You didn't care anymore about wrestling, or you just want to hash it through, or you wanted to quit. And then what made you not quit? Was it your parents, your friends, or your coaches? Do you have anything to tell us? Any stories?
I mean, there's only really two instances in my life where I really thought about just hanging up, just saying I'm done with wrestling, walking away. One of which was after, let's say, fourth grade. I hurt my knee, obviously not to the extent that I did after my freshman year, but I couldn't wrestle. I gained a lot of weight, like, I don't even know, like 30 pounds, 40 pounds, something wild. And thought about hanging it up just because I couldn't do it. I felt terrible about myself. Grades were in the can, and my parents and some of my coaches started saying, you know what? That's fine. You're going to finish out the year though. You're going to finish out the year, finish out the summer. And if you don't want to do it after the summer, we'll let you do it. We'll let you quit. You'll regret it, but we'll let you. Right. And they just kept on reminding me that I'll always regret not doing it. And eventually I got back to wrestling, and I started having more and more fun during practice because the break away from it made me miss it. If that makes sense, kind of like the longer I went without it, the more I wanted to do it. And kind of just a mix between my family, coaches, and just mental, like my mentality changed after I started losing weight. I started feeling better about myself.
Right.
And that's really how I dodged the first quitting bullet, metaphorically, I guess. And then the second time was actually kind of recent. I just won my first, the first time I won the pair of Fargo titles, I was on cloud nine.
Sure.
I was happy. I was real laid back. I was the coolest guy on the block, I guess. I don't know any other way to put it. And then 2-3 months later, I was training up at WVU at their regional training center. My knee was gone, or not my ACL was gone. And it really hit me hard because before then, my coaches, my high school coaches, my middle school coaches, my parents, my club coaches, the staff at my high school, literally everyone was like, oh, I can't wait to see you wrestle. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. You're going to help lead South into more state titles. And then I couldn't. And I felt like I let everybody down. I let myself down. And I just got into a really just dark place in my head because I wasn't a part of anything. I wasn't a part of the team. I wasn't a part of any student organizations outside of student council, but I couldn't participate there because I couldn't walk. It was really, really tough. And after I had my surgery, I started getting involved with student Bible study groups. And as I started to rehab my knee, I started coming back into the wrestling room just to try to see if that would help, since it helped last time.
So
it worked. Obviously it did. I got out of practice.
Now you're okay. So tell the people what an ACL is and tell me.
Your ACL is a ligament in your knee. It's in the front kind of. So if you touch your kneecap, it is, and like flex your quad,
right?
It'll come across from the bottom, like inside part of your knee, all the way across, like the hard part of your, right below your kneecap, and attached to the top part of your outside part. It's hard to explain.
Now is that, is, is that the muscle that goes like underneath the cap all the way up to your side of your leg?
No.
That's really a okay.
It's a ligament that kind of keeps everything from shooting to the outside, like shooting outside and like buckling to towards the outside.
Kind of. Okay, so from the time that you hurt your knee, so how long were you resting? I mean, how long were you out from training?
See, I hurt my knee on September 15th of 2016, and I didn't get back until May 16th of 17. So, was that like eight, nine months?
So did you miss a wrestling season without competing, or were you able to compete and not miss a year?
I couldn't compete in scholastic events, but I managed to salvage the season with Fargo, and I had about 2 months to train for that. And I talked to my parents right before I got cleared. I'm like, all right, are we doing this? Cause I'm not going to go out if I can't do it. And I'm not going to waste the time training if you guys don't think I'll be ready. And they're like, yeah, let's try it. You can do it. And it worked, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I, just a side note, I was actually online and, of course my audience is still getting to know me more as a musician and what I do. And I've been traveling full time for 17 years, but, I was looking online and Braxton, this was what's a little scary. They say that a musician like myself that has like either a radio promoter, a manager, a publicist, that musicians like myself, we get more no's in a year than the average person does in a lifetime. And it's because, you know, we get no's, we get rejection. If our single is not really good, it's that, you know, they don't play it, you know, or, you know, if we make a phone call to the festivals, they might not want us, you know, and the no's go on and on and on. And, but what makes you continue to wrestle? Because honestly, man, ever since I've been involved in jiu-jitsu, jiu-jitsu is extremely a rough martial arts, and there's just, you know, I think maybe 1% of people stick with it. And but wrestling, man, since I knew I was going to go ahead and interview you, I've been watching YouTube videos of wrestlers, and man, they are relentless. And it is probably the most physical, high energy sport I've ever seen. So, I mean, what keeps you competing and not to quit? Is it your love for it, or is it because you're, you know, it seems like the sky is the limit now, and you can probably do anything you want, you know. But what keeps you going?
I mean, I love the sport. I don't know what I'd be without it. And that's about it. Like, I love coming to practice. Like, even though if I've had a bad day at school or just normal everyday high school drama I'm starting to get caught up, I just go to practice and just work out hard. It's just kind of my way of venting. Like, some musicians play music to express their feelings. I wrestle. And it's how I just kind of blown off steam since I was little.
You know, somebody, I guess, that does as well as you at a young age, especially in wrestling, do you feel, I guess, wrestling comes easy to you, or do you feel like you have to work hard at it like anybody else?
Certain aspects of wrestling come easy to me. But other parts are really tough, if that makes sense. Making weight has always been pretty easy for me because I like having a clean diet, looking good, feeling good, that kind of mentality. But the constant grind kind of gets to me. Before I got hurt, I was going 11 and a half months out of the year, getting a week off here, a week off there, two or three days off between camps or practices in the summer. And that definitely wears down on your body and mind. But honestly, it's just kind of how it is now, I guess.
I one of the things, and I want to point out something that I saw when I saw you compete. When I saw you compete, it looked like it was, I mean, when you're wrestling, it was just like effortless to you. It seems like you knew exactly what was going to happen, and you just you were like a step ahead of the other wrestler. That being said, and this is, you know, and there's people that think one way and other people think the other, but do you feel that people, I guess, are born with natural talent, or do you feel that everyone has to work to be talented? Does that make sense?
I feel like there's a little bit of both. Everybody has their God-given talents, but at the same time, if you don't use them to get the edge on someone, then you're kind of wasting them and you won't be as gifted. But honestly, the way I make it easier on myself is just to kind of scout out the wrestlers I'm going to be coming up against or could be coming up against at later times, and right, have my practice partners, whenever they're not working on something, kind of mimic that guy's style. And then wrestling with guys far more better trained than I am, like Kyle Snyder, who's a two-time NCAA champ, one-time Olympic champ, and a couple gold medals in the World Games. And talking to him, I thought that God-given talent was certainly a thing, but now, after talking to him and one of the coaches up where he trains, everybody has a certain edge in a field. And right, if they push their edge so far, it'll look natural.
Right. Do you know, let me ask you this. You know, I watch, I don't know if your dad watches golf or if he plays golf, but I think this goes along with musicians, athletes, people that perform. And I think there's athletes and musicians that perform differently when they actually practice, and then but then they perform differently when they actually have to perform. I mean there's golfers, good illustrations, there's golfers that do extremely well, you know, during practice, but when it comes down to performance and when you have to perform, that they get all screwed up and they are horrible. Do you feel that when you practice, is it different than when you perform, or are you pretty consistent? Does that make sense?
Yeah. On most occasions, I definitely perform better than I practice. In practice, okay, I have a hard time like getting to certain moves, and like conditioning is definitely not a problem during practice, but it's definitely pushing me during practice. But in a match, it all kind of just seems to click. Conditioning hasn't been a problem all year. And getting to my moves really hasn't been either.
Right.
So I don't know why that is. It's just my observation, I guess.
Right.
About my performance over the last 3 months.
Right. You know, I've heard people, you know, say, like in the music business or as an athlete, they've said, well, you know, look at this musician or look at this athlete. Gosh, he just got lucky and he hit it big and everything else. And there was a story. I don't know what kind of music you like, but this guy is a country artist. His name is, Toby Keith. And he, people, I, there's a person that came up to me. He said, man, this guy got so lucky. I mean, he's just hitting it big. He's making so much money. He's getting all this fame and exposure and everything else. And they have no idea what this musician, Toby Keith, has gone through, you know, and where, you know, they didn't know that for 10 years he was living in his car. He was playing all these other bars. I mean, you know, the bars and everything else, the low profile, 20 people in the bar. And it's the same thing. I think a lot of people, they don't think how hard somebody has to train and how dedicated that somebody like yourself has to train. I mean, we've talked about, you know, your diet. We've talked about your running with a cardio. We're talking about your training with, you know, and wrestling. So there's, and it's strength and conditioning. I mean, you know, and it's extremely, you know, just hard. I guess I'm baffled, Braxton, on the regimen that you're on at the level that you're on and how consistent that you've been. So that's, my wife tells me I have ADD. So I go off on these little tangents. When I see a squirrel, I'll just look at it, you know, like a squirrel. But anyway, let me ask you this. Do you feel it's important to, I think, hang around, I guess, people that have the same ambition, the drive, the discipline as you do as a wrestler? Or do you feel like it really doesn't matter at this stage in life, especially being in high school?
You know, I kind of keep a mixed crowd of mentalities around me. That way I can get different points of view of certain problems that I'm having. But definitely being around a close group of friends that have the same mindset as you and the same goals as you definitely helps out in the long run. Whenever I was training for Fargo, I knew that I had 60 days. So for those 60 days, I didn't talk to – I mean, obviously, I spoke in the hallways, and, like, if I saw him at Walmart, I still talked to him. But, like, talk to him about issues I've been having or just spending time with them. If they didn't have their stuff straight as far as – their right mentality or their attitude, I didn't really hang around them.
Right.
Because when it's crunch time, you can't be dealing with issues that, I mean, they matter now.
Right.
But they're temporary issues.
Let me, not to get, you know, sidetracked, but since we're talking about the friends and everything else, Since you're getting into these, since you're doing extremely well with competitions, with these tournaments and people, I mean, you got a lot of eyes on you, and do you feel that you have so-called friends where they say all the right things and they say, you know, Braxton, you know, go ahead and do well. We want to see it first, but then the back of their mind, and this might be pertaining to some of your teammates, but in the back of their mind, they want to see you fail, you know, because there's like a jealousy type of thing when you have, exceeded them, in the competitions and everything else. I mean, it's a tendency that people have. You know, they're jealous and they want to say the right thing. And then, do you feel like you also have friends that really are there for you? That when you screw up and when you need help, they're there through all the thick and the thin and encourage you. But do you feel like there's two kinds of friends that you have, or, you know, I mean, because of your success, I guess, with the wrestling, or have you ever really paid attention to it?
You know, I try not to get wound up in all that stuff, but something that I've noticed, kind of a trend in the last couple 5 years or so, was like in middle school, you had those kind of people around you where they're going to say the right thing, do the right thing, but in the back of their mind, they're thinking, man, I want to see this kid fall on his face.
Right.
But in high school, after I got cleared and started training again, the kids that were wanting to see me fail kind of just fell back, because the guys that wanted me to do well at the same time could benefit, because if I get exposure and a coach comes into the practice room, they're now getting exposure to the coach.
Right.
If I get a college scout at a tournament, they're now getting a chance to get perform in front of that same scout. If I get invited to a camp and bring them along,
right,
they're there too. So right now, a lot of my friends are real friends that actually care about
right.
how I do, because they could potentially save money in the long run.
Sure.
Doing the right things as well.
Do you think it's do you feel like it's hard for you to stay grounded? You know, as you keep on winning you know, when you keep on winning, you sort of sometimes people let their guard down, you make a mistake and you lose a match. I mean, but do you feel like it's, you know, that you've been staying grounded pretty good, or does your parents sort of help you stay grounded?
I mean, staying grounded is hard at times. The one time that I can really, really think that comes into my head was I was at, when was it? About 2 weeks ago. We had just come off of a win in our crosstown rivals' place and a tournament right before that was pretty tough. And after the match, I went out to eat with my girlfriend and one of her friends and some of the guys, just to be dubs. So we're sitting there and a couple of wrestlers walk in and they're like, "Oh my God, you did so great." Just the normal little kid spiel that they give, right. Which I love. I love little kids and helping them whenever I can. And we're like, "Oh my gosh, can we get pictures?" We got pictures and stuff like that.
Sure.
And my girlfriend could just kind of see my head swelling.
Right.
And he reminded me that, listen, there's someone out there that can put knots on your head. So chill out.
Sure.
And my parents are the same thing. My coaches earlier in the season didn't really notice it as much, that I needed kind of the kick in the butt to stay in check. But really, after a close call at a tournament, they realized, hey, every once in a while we need to get on to Braxton to make sure that he has his head where it needs to be. And after really, I don't really have anywhere to have a big head, because I'm either constantly with friends, my girlfriend, my coaches, or my parents. So
I'm thinking, you know, you doing all the right things is so important. But anyway, Braxton, if you don't mind, let's take a few minutes on how the listeners can actually support the Bully Resistance Show, help fight against bullying in the public schools. You can now help us bring awareness in our fight against bullying in the public schools, the workplace, and in your community. Just go to www.davebond.org, and with any purchase you make on Amazon, 2 to 10% of your purchase will go to help fight against bullying and also to help us with the Bully Resistance Show. In order for this to work, you got to go to www.davebond.org, click on the Amazon banner, and then you have 24 hours to make a purchase. Also, if you donate any amount to help us fight against bullying, then you will receive any one of my 15 CDs at no cost, and we'll also include the shipping. For more information, you can go to my website at www.davebond.org or email me at bondmablues@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning back in to the Bully Resistance Show with David Wells. My name is David Wells, and today we've actually been talking to Braxton Amos. As I mentioned earlier, Braxton is a multinational champion in wrestling and also still in high school. And what's exciting, with all the time he spends to train, he's still maintaining a GPA of 4.1. You know, we've been, Braxton, we've been talking a lot about your wrestling and what it takes to stay focused and to maintain the level of performance that you have to do it, you know, extremely well. One of the things that one of the reasons why I actually got you on was just because of the, you know, you mentioned that you were bullied. You know, there's one out of three kids, to all the listeners, one out of three kids are bullied every day of the school year. There's over 276,000 kids that do not go to school because they're afraid of bullying. And what's even more alarming is that over 85% of all bullying that takes place, there's no intervention. And what that means, I'm talking more on a national level, not here in the middle Ohio Valley, but there's no intervention where there's kids are helping out, no intervention in regards to teachers, stopping the bullying. But we were talking a few weeks ago, I think, Braxton, and you mentioned that you were bullied. Can you just give us not so detailed about your whole experience about bullying, but like when you were bullied and who was bullying you and how long did it take and how did it stop and everything?
It was about fourth, fifth, and really early into my sixth grade year. There was this group of guys that before fourth grade, I was friends with, hung out on the play. This is going to sound kind of cheesy, but hung out on the playground with, hung out whenever we could after school. One of them was actually my neighbor. And so like we were all friends. And then for some reason coming into fourth grade, something just changed for them. Started picking on me at first, just small stuff, name calling, just stupid little irritating things that no one would take notice to. And as time progressed, it kept on getting worse and worse. And the teacher, I mean, I like my teachers, but they didn't really do a great job of putting an end to it. They figured, oh, he's bigger, they'll leave him alone eventually, and they didn't. And it was really tough for a while, because it got to the point where they'd hit me, and I knew if I did anything back, they were going to tell their parents. Their parents would complain to the principal or teacher, and I was just going to get in trouble because they would tell half the story and I would get in trouble because all their friends would support their side of the story. And after two or three years of doing that, they had it to the point where no one wanted to talk to me. I was radioactive. No one would go near me at all, talk to me, like help me with classwork. And I suffered a lot with that. How it eventually ended was one day I just had enough. The kids shoved me into a wall, called me names, called my parents names. And I came home. I told my dad, hey, listen, I'm going to get suspended from school tomorrow. Here's what I'm going to.
Right.
I'm this close to breaking and really hurting one of them, because at that time, I mean, early sixth grade, I was 145 pounds, 150 pounds, and could handle myself well because of wrestling and because of boxing that just I picked up. And they were obviously a lot smaller than me, and had gotten away with the picking on and shoving because no one was going to do a thing about them doing it, but would do something if I did. And he's like, you got to think this through. My dad was, listen, you got to think this through. I'll talk to their right. parents.
Right.
This is, you can't just one day snap. It's like, all right, fine. We'll try it your way. And if that doesn't work, we're going to try it my way. And if I get suspended, I get suspended. And that'll be the end of it. And they'll leave me alone. So my dad called their parents. and said, listen,
Jeez, crumb.
This is what's going on. It's been going on for the past 2.5 years, 3 years. It needs to stop. And if it doesn't stop, this is what's going to happen, because
right.
I'm at that point, I was 13, 14 and knew how to take care of myself.
Sure.
When times needed to, when that needed to happen. Yeah. And the next day, they left me alone.
So Braxton, I mean, so for 2 years, I guess, it wasn't really just one person. So it was more than one person, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And then really you were just sort of just keeping to yourself, even though that you could, you know, you could stop it right then if you want to, but you were just really, you really did. You feel like you don't need to do it because you would probably get in trouble and then suspended and everything else, but it sort of just came to a head and you just had enough. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. How did your parents know that you getting bullied for that minute, for that long, or was it really, or did you sort of keep it to yourself and you might tell them a little bit here and there, but, how did they find out, I guess?
I mean, they knew something was up. 'Cause like my attitude was in the trash. My grades were slipping, a lot at that point. I hated coming to school. I found every excuse not to go to school. And it started, what really made them notice was my practice habits started getting just worse and worse and worse. And they knew something was up, obviously, because they see me every day and know what I usually act like. And eventually I broke down in the middle of practice one night, and that's when I told my dad, hey, listen, this is what's going on. This is my plan to fix it. I'm just giving you a heads up.
So were they, let me ask you this, you know, there's, you know, different types of bullying. Of course, you got cyberbullying that's really caused an increase of the bullying, where they're saying that bullying is as bad as today than it has ever been. But I do think it's one of the reasons is cyberbullying. But of course, then you got verbal bullying and you got physical bullying. So during that period of time that you were being bullied, was it just, I guess, verbal bullying? It was a mixture of verbal bullying and physical bullying, or was it also, were you online at the time? I mean, what kind of bullying did they actually, you know, what happened? Was it the physical bullying or verbal or?
Yeah, it was a lot of verbal and physical bullying. I didn't have any social media at the time, which was a smart move on my part, because they would have probably found a way to get at me in that aspect as well. And I mean, I don't know. It was.
Let me ask you this, Braxton, because you know, seriously. For somebody to get bullied off and on for a year or longer, I've never heard such a thing. And because the last couple of interviews that I've had, of course, there was a gentleman. His name was Professor Eli Light, and he deals with kids that get bullied, and it's like more of a short term type of thing. But usually, bullying sort of resolves itself, but. So do you think that the teachers did their part in trying to stop the bullying, like here or there, you know, or they say that, or did they just pretty much say all the right things, say, we're going to look into this, you know, don't worry about it. It's going to, how did they intervene at all? And if so, how?
Some teachers did, some teachers didn't. And I respect the people who were in the administration at the time.
Right.
And I actually have decent relationships with them now. after the whole thing got resolved. But at the time, they just kind of – they did enough to cover their own butts and then just kind of looked the other way. There was – I'm trying to think. There was really – my gym teacher at the time was trying his best to get it noticed and resolved. And then – my fourth grade teacher was also trying to get it resolved as best as he could without sending up a bunch of, not red flags, but without making it obvious to the administration that he's going around their back to get it dealt with.
Do you let me ask you this, and you know, we're not going to mention any school names or, of course, teachers' names, but over the years that you have been, you know, going through junior high and high school, have you seen other kids get bullied? And if so, is it pretty frequent or is it every so often?
I mean, through middle school, you would see the occasional incident, but honestly, in middle school, the principals and teachers even kept it locked down pretty good. I mean, our middle school was the third biggest school in the county behind PHS and South. If it happened, I didn't see it very often. If I saw it, it was mainly sports oriented, where the principals couldn't see it as much because it was like at practices or stuff like that.
Sports.
And then the coaches dealt with it pretty swiftly. And if it was to the point where the coaches couldn't see it, because if it was in a locker room or on a trip where they were in a meeting or something like that, and I'm just speaking from the wrestling side of things because it's what I saw the most. The bigger kids on the team usually dealt with it very swiftly because I had seen what it can do to a kid from a first-person perspective. And then my best friend, who has my – I would hope has my back through everything – right. Saw what it did to me when I was in sixth grade and said that he wasn't going to let it happen to anyone else either. So him and I just kind of took up the role of, all right, this isn't going to happen on our watch. And if you have a problem with that, take it up with the coach, because if it's that big of a deal for us to step in, they're probably not going to want to hear about it from the person doing it.
You know, I tell you what, the good news about you being bullied, of course, there's not really good news, but obviously you didn't let it affect you. I mean, for that amount of time and all the, you know, the verbal abuse, you know, words can kill somebody. I mean, not literally kill somebody, but it's funny how, I mean, I know that when I was, of course, I was raised in Dallas, Texas, and I went to the largest high school. And being in the band was definitely not, you know, the most popular thing. And but I still remember the times that I was bullied. It was not fun whatsoever. But for you to be able to, for not to affect you, at least in your schooling and wrestling, you know, and where you're still maintaining over 4.1. I mean, and winning the national tournaments. I think it's incredible. But at this time, Brax, what I want to do, and we're going to wrap things up a little bit, I'm going to ask you some super questions now, and you can tell me one word, or you can just answer the questions the best you can. Okay, so the first one is, what's one word that best describes you?
Probably odd.
Are you saying odd?
Yeah.
Come on now, Brax. This bullying might have affected you then.
I mean, I guess I'm not the normal 16-year-old kid.
Definitely not. That's true. Okay. So odd. So that, okay. I'll go with that. Let me ask you this. Okay, so what is one of your biggest pet peeves your parents have with you? Now, I'll tell you this. Now, with my daughter, one of my pet peeves is that she has to straighten up her room. You know, I just shut her door because it looks like, you know, a bomb went off. So what pet peeves does your parents have with you?
Trying to think. They don't think I take wrestling serious at times. Like this weekend we had regionals. So if you don't place top four, you don't advance to the state tournament. And going in, I was real loose, real laid back, and that's not normally how I roll into crunch time tournaments. But I mean, I was ready mentally and physically, and my dad, he was like, dude, you gotta be ready. You gotta be ready. I'm like, I got it. I'm good. And I don't know, that's the most recent thing I can think of that really got under my parents' skin.
Okay. Now what natural gift would you like? No, what natural gift would you most like to possess beside wrestling?
Like talent wise or?
Yeah, I know you want to be a musician like me, but you can't. Okay. So, no, just kidding. That was supposed to be funny, but anyway, yeah. Anything. What other gift? I mean, I don't know, man, hunting, any other sport.
Honestly, I wish I could play the guitar like that. Like really? In my mind, that's like really, really cool. And I don't know why, but it just
okay.
Playing the guitar seems really cool in my head. Anyway,
let me ask you this: so, who is your favorite band?
Oh, my favorite band. Trying to think. It's a tough one.
Okay, we can come back.
Eric Church, probably. Or Aaron Lewis.
Now, are they Christian band or is that secular band or because I never heard of them?
Eric Church and Aaron Lewis are both country music artists.
Okay.
So and I mean I listen to country a lot. Being from West Virginia, it's kind of a norm, I guess, that I have to uphold. Okay.
Now, let me ask you this. Aside from that, have you ever been to Nashville?
I haven't. I haven't gotten the chance to go down there yet.
I'm telling you, it's
hopefully between my junior and senior year, I'll be able to travel a little bit more, and see places like Nashville. Because I mean, that's definitely on my bucket list.
Yeah, I've actually worked in Nashville for going on 3 years, and I do a Nashville Ribbon Jazz Festival downtown. It's right next to the Tennessee Titans. And man, if you go there, I mean, if you just go up Broadway, I mean, these bands, Braxton, that perform, first of all, they don't, the venue, like Margaritaville, they don't even pay you. They actually pay on tips and CD sales. But every band that I've actually have seen has, they're like phenomenal entertainers and musicians. And I've worked with several of these, winning The Voice and country artist and actually, they play at the Vienna Rib Music Festival here. So, I mean, they're awesome talent down there. There's a lot to do. But anyway, that being said, so what, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I don't know. Probably just, hey, good job, man. You made it. I don't know. I just want to make it there.
Okay. No, that's okay. And then the last question. On a scale 1 to 10, how weird are you? Now, this could be in part with the question number one. You said odd, so I'll just give you an out. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
I don't know. I'm saying about a 6 or 7. whenever I'm in my own element. I don't know. I like talking to people, like adults, but I'm just socially awkward around 15, 16 year olds. So, yeah. I don't know.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. You know, Braxton, I appreciate, we're going to have to wrap things up, but I do appreciate you coming on the show. And, a lot of times, there are kids that probably prefer not to be on the show just because they feel that they're being weak, or they're embarrassed because they were bullied. And I think everybody has to know or needs to know that almost everybody has been bullied. And if it's just, for a short period of time or like yourself, you being bullied for that amount of time can really affect somebody at your age, and for you to be able to persevere and to be able to maintain your studies and to do well on a national level is just, what's sad. I mean, I haven't even met you. So hopefully sometime soon I'll be able to just shake your hand. But I do appreciate you coming on the Bully Resistance Show. And I would love to go ahead and have you on and just to get an update. That's right with you.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, but thanks for listening. And to all our listeners on the Bully Resistance Show, tune in with us the same time, the same place. You can actually, if you can go ahead and go onto iTunes and make a comment and give us a 5-star, we appreciate that as well. Thank you so much for listening.